Good morning. Good morning. Happy Saturday to everyone as you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. I am your host, Leo and Claudine.
Good morning.
Hey, I can hear you. Yes, you're good. We're just testing the equipment right now and just, you know, things happen. So happy Saturday. How are we doing today?
Fantastic. The sun is looking great.
I know.
Can you imagine?
You know, this is the first time, in 7-8 years that we're out of a drought. We're actually not in a drought mode in the state anymore.
It's amazing.
I know. It is watered everywhere.
Amazing. It's amazing. We actually have irrigated land, and we're very thrilled this year that we don't have to have our allotments cut. So.
Okay, so if you're just tuning into the show, this is Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. We bring you the hottest topics in business. And if you are a business owner in the Central Valley or otherwise, the topics that we talk about are here for you. Just the real talk. It's the real deal. So we want to make sure that you are getting the information that you need so you can make actionable decisions on your business. You know, and sometimes we talk about insurance. Sometimes we talk about the topics particularly that have to do with, you know, running a profitable, sustainable business, because that's what we do. You know, Claudine is a lawyer, and she is there to protect, you know, the sustainability. I'm all about the profit, you know, so sometimes we may argue on the show, but we both want the same thing, right?
Absolutely. We're staying alive. We're staying alive.
And here's the thing. We're fellow business owners. I mean, everything that we talk about on the show, it's not really theoretical. We're not sitting like in a school as professors of law and business, you know, talking about conceptual stuff. We're doing it, right? We're hiring people. We're getting the insurance. We're doing marketing campaigns. We're doing the sales cycles. We're trying to get billable hours. We're trying to do everything. We're trying to be profitable. You know, we have gross margins in line and everything. So today's topic, I think, is particularly important. We're talking about hiring.
Yep, hiring. And I'll tell you, hiring is absolutely key. I mean, there's so many things that are very key to, you know, a sustaining a business and staying alive and being successful. And I don't think anything could be more key than your employees and right. How you get along with them and how they fit within the organization. And, you know, when you go shopping for an employee, there's a lot to be considered. You know,
I consider shopping with your cart.
I love it. But if you think about it, like when you know you go to buy a car, right. You need to know what your needs are. You need to know what your budget is. You need to know, you know, specifically what is it you're looking for in skill level and talent. And then once you go shopping, how do you ensure that you are choosing the right person, the right fit? It's a difficult decision. I know myself, I have been very blessed on the hiring side. But I know that when you're sitting across the table from a couple of candidates, maybe you interview 4 or 5 in a day, and you're sitting across the table and you're having to make that decision.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, the thing is, I mean, there are many cautionary tales as what happens. You know, what you hear in the news is when things go wrong, but things don't always go wrong. I mean, so I think some of the things that I want to talk about today are you know, or I think we want to develop is, you know, wages and salaries, you know, it's a large expense for a business owner. So you must proceed with caution. We're going to talk the caution, what it takes on the legal side.
Right.
And on the business side, there is also, can you afford it?
Can you afford it?
Can you really? I mean, there's no point in growing a business and guessing if you're going to need stuff if you don't have the sales to meet it. And then you don't have the money to pay the employees. Then you have
right.
to lay them off.
That's right.
It's tragic. It is sad. Are employees an asset or a liability? Well, it depends.
It depends.
Right?
I that took my breath away. I thought, well, I don't think I can answer that.
Is it time to change your paradigm? We're gonna talk a little bit about KPIs, key performance indicators that you should be looking out for. And by the way, we're taking callers today. So if you're out there, you know, if you have a question, feel free to call us. Stop us anytime. Dial the studio at 551-3483, area code 209, 551-3483. So. I think the way I was thinking about this today is just let's go from this was your idea of the topic, you know, like you say, I am itching to talk about this stuff because something must have happened or some regulation, something triggered you to want to talk about it today. So I mean, I want you to just kind of get started.
When we approach hiring and when I work with clients on hiring and oftentimes I'm brought in at the end of the relationship when we have to do a termination. And so we're kind of looking back and we're looking back over the relationship that we've had with an employee. One of the things that I really work with clients on is when you hire, we hire with termination in mind. And I know that that sounds to some extent counterproductive or
counterintuitive, right?
Yeah, but the point is that know what you're doing when you hire, manage your hiring process correctly, and therefore, if the day ever comes that you actually have to terminate somebody, you have all your ducks in a row. And you haven't left yourself open for liability, because the person who sues, the employee that sues, is always the ex-employee. It's typically not your current employees. Typically, your current employees, if there's a problem, they will work it out with you. They'll bring it to your attention. You can work out some sort of an arrangement. But the employees that sue are usually the ones who have left employment. So if they have reason to sue, it's because we have done something during the relationship that has not been managed well. So, you know, now when you hire, we've got new regulations. For example, I don't know if you're aware of it, but you're now not allowed to ask certain questions about criminal background.
Tell me it isn't so.
It is so. It is so. And it used to be a very common question. And in fact, the phrase that was used during the campaign to change the legislation was ban the box. And there was a box you checked. Have you had any felonies? Have you been arrested or have you been convicted? And so, you know, it was literally just a box check. And sometimes if you say yes, then it would give you a place to explain. And that's on your application. Now we don't do that. We can't do that anymore. And there's really good reason for that. Really, really good reason for that. I know a lot of employers initially just were like, what do you mean we can't ask about, you know, criminal background? And you can't rely on somebody's arrest record, because an arrest record could be just that. They got arrested and they weren't actually found guilty of anything. And that shouldn't prohibit them from, you know, being considered. And now, if you are going to ask about a criminal background, you need to do it after you've given a conditional hire. And then the person needs to sign an acknowledgement that you are going to look into their criminal history. And it cannot be arrests, and you cannot base decisions on arrests. You cannot make decisions on dismissals, or even, anything that isn't a felony conviction.
So you make the offer conditional,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And you have to look beyond arrests, and you have to have a true conviction.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be even looking until after you're at the conditional hire spot, which is hard for employers because now you've invested a lot of time and gone through hoops and time and so forth, and then to have the candidate fall apart at that stage. It's time consuming, but there's really, really good reason for it. There was a study done a number of years ago. People 2 years after release from incarceration, if they were employed, they had twice as much opportunity to avoid another brush with the law. So what we find, and then a 3-year study found that a year of employment reduced the recidivism rate by 34%.
That's huge.
Huge. It's huge. So in one hand, just like so much of what goes on in California, on one hand, you think, oh my God, are you kidding me? We have to go through this. And, you know, it's just making it more and more difficult on the business owner. But from a general community sense, if we can employ people, you know, in spite of them having had a conviction.
Well, it's second chances.
Yeah.
Right?
We really do a great service to our community.
It totally makes sense. And I, you know what? I'm always willing to change if it makes sense. And the truth is, when you're looking at employment application and you see, put the check on the box, you become biased.
Yep.
So you become, and you know what? I think we're employers. We tend to be passionate about what we do. And we want the best, but I think sometimes we may be wrong in our assumptions.
Yeah.
You know, don't judge the book by its cover, right?
That's right. And now if you have a business that requires somebody to be handling money, or for example, I mean, this is a classic example, law enforcement. So there are certain industries where, you know, depending on the conviction, it may eliminate your ability to be hired. But you have to show that relationship between what's required from the job and that conviction.
So wait, so if the job description onto itself states that you will be doing cash handling.
Right.
So is it okay then to ask those questions or
after
the conditional?
Yes.
Oh,
you still need to get to that place.
So you need to look the other. Basically, that should even enter your mind as an employer conducting interviews. That shouldn't even be in the realm of possibility.
No, but you can make it known that this is a requirement of the job. So if you go to apply for a job as a police officer, you're going to know right from day one what the job requirements are.
So, hey, so you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. We're talking about really an important subject is hiring. How do you hire, you know, and hire right? You know, because, yes, although you want to start with the end in mind, you want to just do things right by the employee. So we'll be right back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine. Welcome back from the break. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. I am your host, Leo Landaverde, and my co-host here is Claudine Sharon from the Sharon Law Firm.
From the Sharon Law Firm.
We love this law firm. All right, so making it happen. So we're having some fun talking about, I'm having some fun. So learning about, you know, the strategies of hiring people right.
Yep.
So let's keep going on it.
So something that's also come up is pre-employment drug testing. And you know, with cannabis now being legal in California for adult use and recreational use, employers are still entitled to a drug-free work environment.
Wow.
So it's a little bit tricky. It's
what a minefield.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky. One of the things that has changed over the last couple of years is utilizing drug tests for employees, current employees, who maybe have had an accident on the job. Or just random drug testing. So now we are not supposed to be doing random drug testing, only under very, very narrow circumstances. So when the decision was made and this changed, one of the examples that was used is if an employee had to go to urgent care because they were stung by a bee on the job site, they shouldn't have to submit to a drug test. So there's a lot of companies that the policy was anytime you had an accident on the job, you automatically were drug tested.
Really?
It's now that unless the accident is there's some sort of a correlation between the accident and the likelihood of drug use that would have caused the accident. So employers have to be very, very careful in that. Again, it was years ago. If you got into an accident, automatically you were sent over to, you know, get a drug test. And you just can't do that now.
Wow.
It's just an invasion.
Well, if you're just tuning into the show here with Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and if you have any questions, you know, we're talking about HR and hiring practices, but any business questions will do. I mean, we want to hear our callers. You can call the studio line, Eric, 209-551-3483. 551-3483, and we're talking about really all the new changes. And I'm looking at this list, Claudine, and it's just pages and pages and pages of stuff that, I mean, honestly, who has the time to look at? I mean, if you're trying to generate some sales and if you're trying to run a marketing campaign, when are you going to have time as a business owner to look at this stuff?
Well, you know, I think if for business owners, what we really work with them and we really recommend is at some point, you know, if you're new in business or you're just beginning to hire, then, you know, obviously sit down with somebody, call our office, sit down with myself or one of the other attorneys in my office and discuss how do we go about doing this? What's the best way to do this? Know that there are minefields and that it's just not as simple as it may seem. And one of the things that we have right now, there's so many things that we do as business owners that we just do from instinct. It just seems like, of course, it seems like a natural, logical decision to make. So, for example, social media in the hiring process.
Yeah.
That's a minefield. Employers do use social media to hire. And in fact, social media is used to
exclude sometimes, right?
Well, obtain candidates. How do we post jobs? We post them on LinkedIn. Right. Post them on all sorts of media platforms. So we're using media, social media, to obtain the potential candidate. And then what are we supposed to do with the social media when we want to hire them? And we want to look at their social media to see, are they a good fit for our organization or not? And we highly recommend and that you just don't start using social media to investigate potential candidates until the very end of the process, if at all. I recommend just not even bothering. And it was interesting, I think yesterday there was an interesting conversation on Twitter between several legal folks. What's the potential if somebody puts false things or fake information on their social media page to make them look like something that they're not? They're more...
You mean to embellish their social media profile?
Yep, to embellish it such that they can get hired. Because typically, if you lie on your application or during your hiring process, if you lie and the employer finds out about it later, that's a terminating offense.
Right.
So is it considered lying if you embellish your social media platforms to make yourself, maybe you're standing there with a picture of a degree that you don't actually have, or maybe you're standing there with an award, or you're having, you know, you're putting information out there that makes you more attractive and potentially more hireable, but it's actually false. Would that be a fireable offense?
Right. Well, you make me think about this. So, well, you know, I read in the news, you know, that the bigger companies, particularly the recruiting agencies, you know, are looking to make sure that, you know, just prowling really through social media, looking for something to uncover about their people that they are bringing in to present to companies.
Right.
So you're saying that could get us in trouble.
Absolutely. Because consider this, that you have a candidate and you're very positive on the candidate. And we're going through the process and that candidate, has a social media platform and you go on that social media platform and you see pictures posted or activities or actions. Let's just say the person is got photographs of them participating in the gay pride parade. And at some point later on down the line, you decide not to hire that person, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That person could potentially come back to you and say, you didn't hire me because I was gay. Or because I'm a member of a protected class, because when you went
serious?
On my social media, you saw that.
Well, how would they even, how would they even know that somebody looked at their social media?
Okay, so we're back to, it never pays to defend yourself. So that person may not be correct. Maybe you decided to not hire him for a
legitimate reason.
A completely different reason.
Well, there may be a legitimate reason. They're just not qualified for the job.
Okay. But now you have to defend that lawsuit. To what
really?
End? To what end? And it happens.
How do you avoid? I mean, hey guys, if you're listening to this, you know, in our audience, this is a big deal. This is important.
This is important. And you know, if honestly, we spent generations hiring people without social media.
Right.
That's why I recommend
from the 2000s on.
Right. I think a lot of our society is coming to the point now where we recognize that what people put on their social media is not necessarily their true self, the true representation.
Look at the Instagram stories, right?
It's made up, make believe. Right. Or it's just a portion of their life and it's not really the sum total of that candidate. I recommend not relying on social media. It's just a whole bucket.
So if you're talking to employers right now, anywhere from, if you have one employee, if you're driving right now around town and listening to this, if you have at least one employer, what can we say to you, or what would you say to somebody who is thinking about hiring somebody, and as it pertains to social media, what would be an actionable thing?
Well, I would say ask yourself, do you really feel like you need, what is the reason you need to go into their social media? What is the reason? It's on one hand right now, it is so common that we think, of course, why not? But then I say to you, what do you really think you're going to gain off of their social media? It's just a Pandora's box.
Right.
It's a Pandora's box. There are laws that apply, and we couldn't go into all of that now, but there, and if you're going to do it, you need to do it correctly. You want to have somebody in your HR department do it, or somebody who handles HR who has a level of confidentiality within the organization. You never, never want to ask for passwords to people's social media stuff. And I don't know, a lot of people have their stuff protected. So, you know, their Twitter account may not be public, or, you know, mm-hmm. their Facebook account or whatever may not be public. You want to
We got a caller coming in here. Sandra from Fresno. All right. Let's put her through.
Hello.
Hi there, Sandra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions. Thank you so much for all of the knowledge that you guys are putting out. But one of the
Thank
things
you.
That stood out to me when I heard you guys talking earlier was when you're hiring or when you are thinking of adding somebody to your team, that, you know, whether they're an asset or a liability. What did you mean by that?
Ah.
Well, it depends if you ask the numbers person or the legal person.
Or the attorney. So for me on the business side, it really could be an asset. So perfect example. So if you're running a staffing company and your job is to sell the staff, the talent onto companies for a margin, and that's what employment agencies do. So then you need those people to bill. Right, to the employer, so they show up to the job assignment, and then you pay them a dollar amount, and the difference is your profit. In that case, they're an asset, right? Okay. They're generating revenue for you for every hour that they worked, so they become variable costs. So it's a variable cost. Now, a liability would be if you didn't do things right and some of the things that Claudine has talked about today, then the cost of them leaving the company and not in good terms and a disgruntled employee, it may turn out to be a liability that leads to legal action. What do you think? You know?
Yeah. And from our side, from the legal side, somebody who is a liability is going to be somebody who, for example, if you have a painting, you're a painting contractor and you have a paint company and you have to send your employees into people's homes, you want to have that employee who is somebody who generally makes good decisions, you know, moment by moment decisions, you know, knows when to not say something, knows when to say something. Because if you have somebody, they may be a great painter and they may be a really good person at heart, but they just don't have the filter or they just don't have the ability to present themselves in a way that doesn't create problems. I've worked with a lot of contractors over the years, and I can't tell you how often employees will go in and make a comment that didn't need to be made, that created a problem that wasn't even there to start with. And so depending on your business.
Right. And then I understand that, because then that client that you have, that customer, is not going to refer your business out.
That's right. And now they're questioning you, or they're questioning the job, or they're questioning, you know, well, so-and-so said such and such, you know, when he was here on Friday. And now, you know, we just have a lot of liability. But
right. Okay.
The person who... go ahead.
One other question. So as far as when you're hiring somebody, I mean, I'm finding that the more knowledgeable somebody is, and they're, you know, if they've been doing their line of work for a while, they're not as readily, you know, to learn how you do things and you know, in my own business. I'm not sure that my next hire, if I want them to be somebody who could be teachable and learn and grow and maybe have some talent, you know, versus the person who kind of knows it all, but then they want to do it their way.
Right.
I'm having trouble with that.
And I think that that's the classic question. Do we hire somebody who's, you know, maybe less years in the industry and really coachable and poised to learn, or do we hire somebody with, you know, extensive experience who maybe already kind of does it their way?
character, you know, I always think character versus experience. You know, character meets trumps it all. You got somebody with the right character, you can teach them. Somebody with a lot of experience but not the right character, long term may hurt you.
Yeah.
Does that answer your questions?
Yes. And then the character, I mean, you don't really know them so well in an interview. So, yeah, I guess you have to really go by the questions that they are, you know, what they write on their application and, you know, questions to ask during the interview. This might be key.
Yep. I think you're picking up. I mean, you must have taken a lot of notes. I mean, that's all the things that we're talking about today. So, Sandra, well, thank you so much for tuning into the show and asking that great important question.
Thank you. I'm listening in.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Okay. So, yeah. So,
That's a really good question that she brings up. That, you know, and I think that the answer to that, I don't know if she got that, was really knowing yourself.
Well, great time for a break. So thank you for listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leah and Claudine at Power Talk 1360. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. I'm your host, Leo Landaverde with Greenland HQ, Greenland Advisors, and my co-host, Claudine Sharon from the Sharon Law. Now, we've been talking a lot about, and we just had a caller talking about, you know, an employee being an asset versus a liability. We're talking about hiring practices today. Now, on the business side, how Claudine and I complement each other is we really come at different angles. We are the yin and yang for your business. So if you have questions on the business side, I am all about building, scaling, and profitable. And you can find us at www.greenland, as in the country of Greenland, then HQ.com, HQ for headquarters. So it's Greenland, GRENLANDHQ.com. And please, Claudine, shameless plug, where do we find you?
www.sharon-law.com, and that's SHERRON-law.com.
Awesome. So if you're tuning into the show, we're talking about, you know, if you're listening to us for the first time, we give you actionable things that you can take. If you just take one thing that we talk about today and do something about it, I guarantee you you'll be much farther on than most people. Now, do you guys at the Sharon Law Firm, do you guys work with some type of toolkit? Do you give, like, if a new client is coming in, right, mm-hmm. and he meets with you guys, mm-hmm. and I know you guys, we think alike, do they walk away with some type of strategy, or how do you keep in making sure that they are following these things, that, you know, that they don't get into trouble? Proactive.
Okay, so depending on what industry the client's in, so we have certain, say, packets that we have set up.
Hey, we got a caller. Hold on, hold that thought. Chad, call in right now. Social media. Hey, Chad, are you on the call?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great.
How are you?
If I was, I'm an employer, I do a lot of hiring. If I was to look at a potential candidate's social media, it wouldn't be, if, you know, to look at if they're gay or straight or white or brown or black or whatever. I'd be looking to see what he said about his past employer, you know, and what kind of nonsense he posted about that. And, you know, if he posted a whole bunch of garbage about his past employer, that would tell me that he has a decided lack of character. And, man, I'd want to dodge that guy like a
right. Absolutely.
Enlighten us, Claudine.
Well, no, and you're absolutely right, Chad. The reason why you're looking is not necessarily because you want to discriminate because a person's a member of a protected class. And actually, the reality is, in my personal opinion, is there's a lot less discrimination than there is discrimination lawsuits. People are not necessarily attempting, or really, they don't care to discriminate against somebody. They just want an employee who's going to be a good employee. However, those lawsuits are available, and it's a claim that somebody can make. So once you've learned something by going onto their social media sites, then you can't unlearn it. And that's where the problem comes in, is that now somebody can come back to you and say, well, you didn't hire me because you found out through my social media that I'm a member of a protected class. Mm. And again, it's back to the adage, is it doesn't pay to defend yourself. But you're absolutely right. Everybody I've ever talked to on the subject, employers, they're not looking to discriminate against somebody because they're disabled or, you know,
correct,
member of a class. They just want a good employee.
Yeah. Does that make sense, Chad?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you took a snapshot of that, you know, that posting about him dogging some past employer, and you say, no, this right here is why I didn't hire you, and I don't need that here. And then is that going to be actionable in a lawsuit?
No. No, it's only actionable if they can demonstrate that you did not hire them because they were a protected class. And the member of a protected class is race, religion, national origin, sexual orientation. California has a number of extra ones thrown on there. But, you know, your basic protected class categories.
And Chad, you know, I'm all about, and we've been talking about this all throughout the show, is I'm all about character. Right? You want a character embedded in that person. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think character trumps everything. You can have all the experience in the world, but if you can't keep your mouth...
No, and fire for who you are.
Right.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Did we answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for tuning in.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Chad. Keep listening.
Enjoy that sun.
Okay. So, where were we?
Just continuing on the social media
piece. Yes, and it's a hot item.
And the subjects of how do you consider when you're bringing somebody on, how do you financially consider it? I know you and I have worked through that in my business.
Yes.
And you taught me quite a bit and helped me cross over
metrics
into a new way of thinking.
So great. So you want me to, okay, so let me go into the business side. So if you're running a business today, your wages, your payroll will most likely be your largest expense.
Yes.
If you provide, you know, below the line, meaning that if you don't have any cost of goods sold,
right?
Like if you're in a manufacturing world and you have to buy widgets, you know, the materials to create the product that you sell, then you're going to have a cost associated with that, and that's going to be a substantial cost,
right,
that is going to go up and down with sales. But below that, right, you're going to have employees. And this different. There's not a fast rule. There's some indicators per industry. So every industry is different. For instance, your industry, you're in the professional services category, in which you produce. You have no widgets to produce. You sell a professional service.
Right.
Right. Your wages are going to be substantial. Right. So what's the sweet spot? Right. I always tell employees, if you have no cost of goods sold, you want to stay as much as you can below 40%. Now, some articles will say, some analysts will say, well, 50%, it's fine. It's all relative.
So when you say 40%, explain that.
Of your sales.
So your overall payroll should be 40% of your overall sales.
What I'm going to say to you, as little as possible.
Okay.
Right now, but if you must choose a number, we'll say 40%. Now, think about it in terms of, what if you produced $1 million worth of sales in 1 year and then you have no cost of goods sold, so your gross profit, it's $1 million. So you have $1 million business that basically with no associated costs, and now you start chipping away, and the first expense is going to be your payroll line. Now, if your payroll is 40% and consider all things equal and they're within range, like your rent, you know, your rent, it's going to be what it's going to be. If you are a law firm, you got to have, you know, decent space.
Right.
You want to have a conference room. You want to be in a nicer building. You know, all those kinds of things that go with your profession.
Yeah, being in industrial areas is
not working. So you may get a dollar triple net on your lease and have this fantastic space that nobody's going to want to come to.
Right.
Right. Some things are expected of your profession. Now, if you're a white collar, if you're a dentist, if you're a doctor, if you're a chiropractor, you need to be a nicer space. You're going to spend a little more, perhaps 2-3% of your sales is going to be go to rent, but payroll is always going to be higher. Now, here's the problem. Does that answer your question, Claudine?
It does. It does, but I have another question. So
yes.
Let's just say you're just starting in business and you've been running your business by yourself for, you know, the last whatever year, 2 years. And,
sure.
And now you're at that place. Now I'm getting it to a point where I need to hire somebody. I need to bring somebody else on. How do you know where to put them in terms of the pay scale? I mean, I understand that there's a general wage range, So in my industry, the wage range is quite substantial. I mean, somebody coming fresh out of law school easily can get started at $60,000 a year.
Right.
And somebody who's, you know, 5 years out of law school can, you know, easily demand 120. So there's a big range. How do you work with clients to cross that bridge of
I get that question 90% of the time. And here's how I answer it. I first look at your historical. If I'm coming in and if I'm engaging you, if you're a business owner, say if I'm engaging you, the first thing I'm gonna do is the historical data. Where you been? Are you profitable? Can you even afford staff?
Right.
You can have $300,000 worth of revenue and no employees and losing money every month.
Right.
I don't know that until I start asking those questions. So I start looking at your profit and loss. I start looking at your balance sheet. Your profit and loss is, you know, it's a historical thing for the 1 year, whether you're a fiscal year or a calendar year. 12 months will tell me whether you're profitable or not.
Right.
So if you generated $300,000 worth of sales, right, and it's just you, and you have no cost of goods sold, and you're very frugal in your expenses, and you have $200,000 to fall to the bottom line, you're going to have a lot of tax liability, right? Then you start investing in your business. So if you generate $300,000, right, and two-thirds fall to the bottom line, you're very, very profitable. Now, very rarely will a startup be profitable.
Right.
Where does the money come from with a startup? It comes from the, you know, injection of the founders or a loan, right? You know, you only raise capital through sales, loans, or capital.
Right.
So are you profitable? Number one, if you are profitable, are you collecting your AR if you produce? You know, if you're not a restaurant, you're going to send them bills. You know what it's like sending a bill to a client that doesn't pay?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to answer that without looking at multiple variables. So I would say, are you profitable on an accrual basis? Then are you profitable on a cash basis? How much profit? Now, if you're going to bring in, so back to the example, you made $200,000 and you're all this discretionary cash is just sitting in your bank account. Now you have this potential tax liability. You need to invest. Now we bring another attorney, right? Mm-hmm. And you pay him a decent wage. And I would expect him to be a revenue producing entity.
Right. Now, so now that's the crossover. Is how does I guess it goes back to having your books done and making sure that your books are squared away. Because when you do hire somebody, let's just say you're the landscaping company and you've got a lot of accounts and you need to bring on somebody who can go take over and do some of that work, then you have to manage their profitability, meaning are they working enough hours and doing enough jobs? And then you have to do the analysis.
We're going to have to go on break soon. But one thing I want to talk about in the next segment is it's the biggest key performance indicator that I look at in a business is profit per employee. Some companies will look at revenue per employee. I want to talk about profit per employee. If your employees are profitable, I'm going to say hire them all day long. Right. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here on Power Talk 1360. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here on Power Talk AM 1360, serving the Central Valley, California. I'm here with Claudine Sharon from the Sharon Law Firm, and they are your go-to. No bias there. This should be your go-to law firm for all business matters. And I am Leo Landaverde, and I'm all about a Greenland HQ building profitable businesses. And the last segment, we were talking about, you know.
This is such an important subject, and I have to just, you know, give Greenland a shout out because I really didn't understand how to deconstruct the employee the way you've taught me how to do it. And you've taught me something that will help my business grow and has helped my business grow, but it's a lesson that has lasted a lifetime and will continue to. I've never been able to do it quite as successfully as I have since you taught me how to do this.
because I keep driving those numbers and those metrics every week, right?
That's right. Because when I look at a candidate, when I look at a potential, say, a new attorney coming in, I'm looking at their experience. I'm looking at their competency level. I'm looking at, you know, will they be timely? Will they, you know, be able to effectively do the research to give clients the correct advice? I'm looking at something completely different. But at the whole entire time, I know that they're expensive. Attorneys are expensive. And the payroll's significant. And so I have to pay attention to that. How do I cross that bridge? How do I make those two things work in tandem? And it's really, you've taught me, it's all about the numbers.
Yeah. So let's talk about the numbers a little bit. So to me, it's, you made a statement in the last segment about having your books in order.
Yes.
If your accounting and finance is not in order, that would be like building a house on sand.
Correct.
It is the foundation. It is the bedrock. To me, you absolutely need to invest in an accounting software. Either you need to do your books yourself.
Or hire somebody
like my company to do it at a fraction of the cost that it would cost you to hire somebody full time. You must have your accounting done. I start with that. Now, as a CFO, I come in and I'm assuming that their books are not right. I take a look at it, making sure that they're right. Once they're right, I start thinking about the business model. It's all about your business model.
Right.
If you are a professional services and then you're selling those services out, the cost is going to be the staff that you have doing them and what the metrics are, right? So you look at the first thing that we talked about with you was break even.
Right.
What is the break even scenario per person? So once you reach break even, anything above that is profit. It's just deciding how much profit. And I think it's just being a good steward of your business.
It really is. And I think that, gosh, from experience, I can tell you, having been in the construction business for going on 30 years, we were in the janitorial business and, years before that, and not ever having that connection where somebody, we were so worried about our business, we were so worried about the project, we were so worried about getting through it, and that we didn't put the emphasis on having the books done and the books right. And boy, let me tell you, you can grow. If you've ever sat back, and if there's people out there listening to this who are in business and have thought to themselves, oh, how do I grow to that spot? How do I get to be that big, you know, construction company? Or how do I get to be that, you know, big, successful company? It's all about the numbers.
So let me give you an example. All right. So let's talk about the easiest way to kind of wrap your head around profit per employee is on the salespeople.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because it's very quantifiable. It's very objective. You know, the days of hiring people in commission are just becoming harder and harder. There's a lot of jupes, you know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through to make it right. But say you pay somebody, and just throw some random numbers, $100,000 a year. Now, you know better than that when you pay somebody $100,000, there are other costs associated with having that person on staff, right?
You know that.
The payroll, the bennies, the perquisites, and if you give them an auto allowance, all of that adds up to a factor. I like to put that factor at 1.2.
Okay.
So 20% cost above and beyond paying somebody. So the $100,000 sales rep is now, you know, let's just say they're selling software. You know, longer sales cycle, higher per item, price per item, et cetera. So you have $120,000 cost in cash that you have to come up with every year. Now, the easy question, how much sales does that person need to do in that calendar year to pay for themselves? It would be $120,000.
Break even. That's your break even.
That's zero. Zero to me is a very important number. I need to know how quickly can I get to zero on any investment.
Right.
That's when you start really recouping your cash. It is your return on investment. It comes beyond that. Right? Are you following me?
Right.
So if you're a business owner, you need to be very objective. If you pay somebody $15 an hour, it doesn't cost you $15 an hour. It costs you a whole lot more than that, a little bit more. So just as a buffer, added 20% to that. That is that. So if that person is in the counter, and if you're looking at your business, so if you have, you know, $1 million business, I don't want to put anybody through a math test, but you know, you're operating, you know, your cost of goods sold is 50%, so you have $500,000, and you know, and you have five employees, right? Your gross profit, over those five employees. So each employee is represents $100,000 worth of profit, right? I guarantee you that if you pay them less than $100,000 and all things remaining equal, you're going to have a profitable business. Now, I'm oversimplifying a pretty tough concept because there's a lot of metrics that go into that. But to me, it's, you know, companies like Google and Facebook, they say, well, you know what? We know that we just reached the milestone, $1 million of revenue generated per employee if you are at Facebook. And you have 2,000 employees, that's $2 billion, right, worth of sales divided by the 2,000. That's, you know, that's a lot of revenue. That's a very high threshold. I guarantee you that if somebody's bringing that kind of revenue per employee, they're going to be very profitable. But those are the unicorns, right? Not every business is like that.
No. I mean, again,
that's 1% of all businesses.
Yeah, go back to the
reality.
Let's go back to the guy or the gal who's, you know, cleaning houses or, you know, a carpet for a living. Or
so if you're listening to the show right now, if you go back to your profit and loss from last year,
right?
2018. Look at how much net income you had, right? Let's go with an accrual basis. And if you had $100,000 worth of net income, then go back and add all the employees that you had on your payroll, divide the $100,000 into it, and that's your profit per employee. Are you happy or sad?
Okay. So then step number two comes, and this is what I have embarked on myself here, is then you track it, setting up the metrics for the employee after they're hired.
Yes.
So now you have it. Okay, so we have an idea of how many, you know, sales that this particular person needs to make in order for us to break even. And then we look at that, and then we have to set up the metrics going forward. How do you measure that? And I know how you and I do it for my business. You know, we do it on a weekly basis and then ultimately on a monthly basis, and it rolls into quarterly and so forth. And do you recommend that business owners do it that often?
I think it really depends on the sensitivity of cash. You know, businesses that are growing and are consuming a lot of cash, you want to look at those metrics on a weekly basis. If you're a seasoned business to over 10 years, you'll be profitable year over year. You probably don't want to look at it on a weekly basis. If you have $500,000 in the bank and you're looking at your P&L, your profit and loss, and you're profitable every month, maybe you don't want to look at it every week. But fast growing businesses like yours, mm-hmm. they need to be looked at every week. And we look at the billable hours against, you know, per employee that turns into revenue. And then you subtract, you know, you take away whatever is the payroll. And the delta, it's really your profit for that workforce. But that's just one indicator. You also want to look at, you know, the customer set. You know, we didn't even talk about it today. Speaking of KPIs, which is one of my favorite things to do, is key performance indicators. There are many for a business that are applicable. Now, in law firms, you know, billable hours is one. But if you are in another business, you know, you can have I'm looking at this list, employee satisfaction index, percentage of employee, that they are culture KPIs now. Your net promoter score, absenteeism, you know, like somebody is, there are things in the HR world that you have to make sure that you are, that you're measuring. For instance, I know from working with, manufacturing company that the Cal OSHA, they want to make mm-hmm. Number of mm-hmm. incidents, number of yes. days without an injury.
Right, right.
You know, the manufacturing world is big on that. You know, if you have an injury, your modification rate for workers' comp, it's
yep.
it's a big expense.
Yep, and you can drive down your costs.
But you don't have to worry about that because your workers' comp, Claudine, is negligible.
Right.
It's very little, but you have other insurance that you have to worry about, you know, like your
malpractice,
your general liability, professional liability, and these are the kinds of things. And you know, because we're running out of time, it's hard to, we're going to have to just probably expand on this topic soon. But you have been listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine, and you know, I appreciate the callers today. We care about this stuff. We want you guys to be, you know, who wants a, you know, what's the point of making $1 million a year if you're losing $1 million out the door in litigation?
Right.
Right?
And it goes fast.
And it goes fast and it goes quickly, right? So you have you know, some of the other topics that we've got are coming. You know, next week, we're actually going to be talking about growth marketing. We have a great host that are going to be talking about just really how you do marketing for a growth company, which I'm very excited about that. We're going to learn about that. So hope everybody has a great Saturday. Stay tuned. We'll come back next Saturday with Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. So Empower Talk, AM 1360. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.